Welcome to the Good Grief Conversation. I'm your host, Janet Jones, and you're listening to UK Health Radio. This programme brings you honest, gritty, emotional and inspiring conversation around a subject that affects all of us, yet is still very much taboo. So, join me now for this inspiring Good Grief Conversation. Hi, and welcome back to the Good Grief Conversation. It's great to be with you again. Today's guest is a psychotherapist, and he specializes in sexual therapy, couples therapy, and grief therapy. His name is Silver Nevis, and he is based in London, and we got together having a really interesting conversation about different kinds of grief. Everything that we read, books, social media, all that kind of thing seems to be grief of, you know, death of a loved one. And you regularly hear the saying that grief is love with no place to go. But what if that family member or supposed loved one who's passed away, that actually you feel relieved that they've passed away? What do you do with that kind of grief? What does that unearth for people? And also, you know, the kind of grief where maybe your loved one dies and a whole history is revealed that you knew nothing about. What does that do to a person also? So Nevis and I, we dug deep to find out all about this kind of scenario that really is not spoken about. So before I introduce you to Silver, let me just say that these conversations are really important, and I know they're a little bit taboo, but they need airing, they need talking about in order to really help people. The stories are a little bit uncomfortable, but when we share stories, we get much better connected. So if you would like to support the work that we're doing here at the Good Grief Conversation, I always ask my guests to provide some gifts for my listeners. And all of those gifts go into this little product called Podcast Extras. Podcast Extras is available on my website at thegoodgriefconversation.com, and all you do is just sign up for that. Now, there is a free option because the most important thing is that this information gets to people who really need it, regardless of money. However, we do need a little bit of your support here at the Good Grief Conversation. So I've also put a couple of little options there. One of them is for the price of a paperback book, you can have access to Podcast Extras, or the price of a hardback book, you can have access to the Podcast Extras. Like I say, you can still have the free option, but a little bit of help would be gratefully appreciated. It is now my pleasure to introduce this week's guest, Silver Nevis, the psychotherapist, where we're going to dig deep on some different kind of grief. Silver, thank you for joining me this morning on the Good Grief Conversation. And the work that you do is very detailed and you cover many things, one of which is grief. And as we were just talking about, grief is all about relationships. But just give me a little bit of your background as what kind of brought you into the grief field and how you can help your clients with grief.
Yes, thank you. I wasn't originally, when I started my career as a psychotherapist, intended to work with grief as a specialization. I was working, my specialization is psychosexual and relationship therapy and also trauma therapy. And over the years, with those two kind of specialist areas, I've started to see people coming to me, for example, wanting to resolve the trauma before they died, so they received a terminal diagnosis, for example. Mostly, I was starting to see clients who got some sound secrets about loved ones after they died. So then we started to really talk about complex grief. And this is really how I got into the field. And then I don't know how it happened because I didn't advertise for it, but the universe sent me a lot of clients who came to me because they suffered a complex bereavement, complex grieving, in all sorts of different stories.
Right? And that is a thing, isn't it? Grief, you know, it's one word that covers many, many emotions and experiences. One thing you just said there about how people would come to you with like hidden secrets. And that happens more often than you can imagine, actually. And would that be that you say they come to you with hidden secrets? Is it that they know that they've got a terminal illness and then they're like, how can I clear this before I do die? Or is it that somebody has died, they're suffering grief, and then they've found all these secrets? And then what do you do with all of that? It's probably both, isn't it?
Yes, both. So some people were just really wanting to think, okay, I'm coming to the end of my life. I know I'm going to die in the next few months. I want to die peacefully and kind of clear my secrets and clear my traumas. And that's one way of that people come to me. Really, a lot of the time also, it's about somebody, a spouse dying. And after the death, they discover trails of emails, for example, or kind of, you know, through technology, now it's even easier, and find out that their loved one had a double life, a secret life. And suddenly it's becoming very difficult to know who you're grieving.
Well, yeah, because that brings on different aspects to grief then, isn't it? You're grieving person, I guess, but also the life. So if somebody finds themselves in that position, what would be their approach to dealing with that?
Yeah, it's very difficult because at the very beginning, it's so shocking that people are in double shock. So they're in the shock of losing a loved one and in the shock of discovering new things, which is then reevaluation of the entire story together and entire life together. You know, they can just start to think back and think, when we were on holiday back then, you know, were they thinking about me or were they thinking about this other person, for example? So, and a lot of the questions is, was our life together real? You know, when you discover a new a double life. And the very big painful part of it is that there is no way of finding answers because that person's died. So you can't ask the questions. And then a lot of the time, what they will do is just go dig deeper and deeper into more emails and other kind of evidence that they have online or whatever. And often they get to read some stuff that doesn't help them. In fact, it makes things worse because the more they know the gritty details of this other life, the harder it is to manage. So the first bit I would suggest when somebody finds themselves in that situation is to not keep digging. Because all they will find is worse stuff. And I think knowing that the person had a double life is kind of enough.
But that must be very, very hard because, you know, we are curious beings, aren't we? And it's almost like, and especially at the time of death, because life becomes a level playing field, everything is open. And you want to know absolutely everything. So I can understand how somebody would just be obsessed with digging and like, I need to know everything in order to piece their life back together. But it's not really piecing the life back together. It's kind of making it harder.
Is disintegrating further, actually, because once you know the details, for example, if you know that your spouse met the other person in a particular hotel, then that hotel becomes a trigger. And if that hotel happens to be on your way to work, you will be triggered every day. So it actually makes your life worse than better most of the time.
So coming back to that human desire to know everything, and it's okay to say, oh, you know, don't do that. That's not going to help you. But what tactics do you do in order to stop yourself from doing that? Because it is a human thing, isn't it? You know, but if you may consciously know that that isn't a good thing to do, you're driven by your heart at that point. How do you then, big question, get your head and your heart to communicate and work together?
Yeah, that's a big question. And that's exactly actually why people come to therapy, to learn those skills, really. One of the good things is to delay, because if you delay the urge of looking into, of digging a little bit more, then it really, really helps, because then your brain can get engaged in something else, even if it's just a couple of minutes delay. And it's really learning what works better for you. And so some of the things is breathing and counting, for example. And if you breathe deeply and you count your breath, your brain is busy counting, and so it's not really thinking about other things. Other people, you know, get out of the house and just run around the block. Another way of doing it, you know, muscle tensing, for example, you know, is very good when you clench your fist and you really slowly. That's another way of delaying some of these urges of checking. Or distraction actually is very good. But distraction has to be active rather than passive, and it has to be something that you're really engaging with. So distraction doesn't work if you scroll your phone endlessly, because your brain is still going to be wanting to check. But if you distract yourself watching, say, for example, a documentary that you're really interested in, then you are fully engaged in it. And so that's an active distraction.
So really, it's coming back to you and who you are and looking at what you are interested in and focusing on that, as opposed to focusing on something that you now don't have any control over anymore. What about the power of forgiveness in a situation like that?
Yes, I find forgiveness really interesting. I think a lot of the time, forgiveness is good, working towards forgiveness, but actually sometimes things happen that is unforgivable. I think a lot of clients or people, let's say a lot of people, put a lot of pressure on themselves to work towards forgiveness. And when they can't reach that, they feel more guilty and worse about themselves. I say that you don't need forgiveness in order to heal, but what you do need is to forgive yourself for not forgiving the other.
Oh, that's an interesting take on forgiveness. Yes. But if you can't forgive the other person, and like you said earlier, they're not here to answer or to become accountable. And if you can't forgive them, are you not just holding on to the anger then?
Not necessarily. You can still process all of the emotions but without forgiving. So what it means is that when you think of that person, you might feel angry at that time. You might think that was just so bad, but it's just a fleeting feeling that comes and goes rather than one that just keeps hold of you. And that's okay. That's okay to feel that way sometimes. So, I mean, you know, in order to kind of like try to really let it all out of your system, something that's really good is letter writing, for example, writing to that person that you don't get the chance to speak to anymore, and just really going into the, yes, let it out, to the raw, unedited part of yourself. So, you know, it doesn't have to be polite or anything, you know, and you just put it all down and you do it several times. And over time, it's a good way to process those very, very deep, deep emotions that feel that it really holds your entire self.
That's the power of the pen, isn't it? You know, when you really let go through a pen, I mean, I'm a writer and I would say more so than through a keyboard, because a pen is directly linked to your body and actually triggers things in your mind, doesn't it? And I guess the action, and you can be a lot more aggressive in your pen, I think, than, mind you, you can bash a keyboard pretty quickly as well, so I suppose. But I've certainly, I find the power of the pen is a great healer. So yeah, definitely going to get it all written down. And like you said, there's no hold bars in that, because you're not publishing it. You're not asking someone to read it. You can talk directly to them.
Exactly. Pen and paper, very good. I recommend pen and paper, as you say. And then if it's one of my clients and they are up for it, then I ask them to read it out loud to me. Because also processing it with speaking out loud after writing is the second bit of processing that can be really quite powerful. And to have all those big raw emotions witnessed by a therapist is very good. Because often when people are in those situations, they're really isolating. They don't feel they can speak to other people about it because it's so shameful, and they are racked with guilt as well. So often they don't go to people. You know, they try to mourn as they should be, as in mourning the husband, but they're not able to mourn the betrayer.
Yeah. And like you say, the thing that you just spoke about there was the shame. And shame is a really terrible emotion. It's a hard one to process, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, it's very toxic as well. And one thing that really does work well to reduce shame is very much about being witnessed by another human being as we are, and, you know, in a really kind of non-judgmental space. So if you do have a friend or two that can be that, then that's great. But most often in this particular situation, people would find a therapist.
Yeah, because this is like so personal that maybe you don't even want your friends to know.
If you have been with your spouse for a very long time, often you'll have common friends, and people feel like they can't really talk about this with their friends because it will also tarnish the memories of those friends. So it's really, people are all alone with
this. That's a very difficult situation to be in, isn't it? The other one that we were speaking about, somebody grieves the loss of, say, a family member or a loved one who they feel relieved that they are no longer here because of past traumas and things. Let's pick that conversation up because, again, it's happening behind closed doors to a lot of people, and that must be very difficult to speak openly and honestly about when we're told that grief is love with nowhere to go. You know, that's a very common thing that people say with grief. It does that resonate with somebody who thinks, thank goodness that person isn't here anymore to taunt me? What do you think?
You're right. It's just so nobody speaks about this. And it's another kind of group of clients I get quite a bit, not knowing how to grieve somebody who traumatized them and who they have a very difficult relationship with or had a difficult relationship with.
Yeah. And when we say traumatize them, let's just throw out a few kind of scenarios with that so that, you know, we get clear on that. What do people come to you for?
It could be a parent who sexually abused them, for example, and never took accountability for it. Or a violent parent, you know, somebody who is beating them up, for example. And even though it hadn't happened in their adult life, it might have happened for years and years and years. You know, there was also not enough apologies done for them. So the relationship was still quite ambiguous, really, and quite difficult. Or any type of neglect, you know, parental neglects. So it could be, you know, being abandoned or being seen or being put down, highly criticized.
I was going to say verbal abuse. Yeah.
Verbal abuse and psychological abuse is just as bad as physical sexual abuse, really. You know, if it's ongoing and consistent, you know, people get really, really wounded with that. And sometimes the wounds, they keep forever.
Because that chips away at your psyche, doesn't it? You know, slowly. So they're almost like a slow drip of trauma. So let's say, you know, somebody's been in any one of those positions and that person has died. What do they find themselves in? What position are they in?
Again, quite a lot of shame and quite a lot of guilt because they have very conflicting emotions. So the grief, you know, what we say is grief is internal, so it's invisible. Mourning is the external way of expressing grief. So often they feel like on the external, they have to mourn in the way that society tells them to mourn, as in, oh, it's my mother that died, it's my father that died, therefore I should look like this, I should look sad in that way. But inside there might be relief and even sometimes joy. And that can be very difficult. And there, again, there is nowhere they can go. It's very difficult to speak to anybody about that, to say, you know, my father's just died and I feel happy about it. You know, it's really taboo. And most people, even good friends, would be finding it really difficult to hear that and to hold that.
Because they'd be shocked, because like you say, that's not what society has prepared us for at times of death and mourning. Somebody that I know who her husband died of cancer. He had cancer for 5 years. She nursed him. And for those 5 years, you know, she was a very sexual woman. I mean, she was older, but she was still very sexual. And for 5 years, that just wasn't in her life. And she was angry about that, disappointed, frustrated, and all those kind of things that come with it. And then eventually he died. She went through, you know, what was the mourning that was to look like to all her friends. And then one day, and I guess this is because she knows the work that I've done in the past with the happiness work, she said to me, she said, people expect me to be mourning. She said, but I'm actually really relieved. But I feel so guilty at feeling relieved. And she was just in turmoil with her emotions. She actually ended up on antidepressant pills because she didn't know what to do with it all. So, I mean, that's a big emotional response, isn't it? And you then left to deal with all of that. How do you do that?
That's right. I mean, that's another thing that nobody talks about, the relief for regaining your sexual life when your spouse dies, for example. I mean, that is something, nobody talks about. As a psychosexual therapist, I speak about this quite a lot, actually, because before, as you say, if it's like a long illness of cancer, the sex life has died. So there's already been a loss, already something to grieve before the person actually died. And then afterwards, they can be like, of course, within the grief period, a place of, oh, my, now I'm free to explore my sex life again. And that is really normal and really natural, but it is not what society expects. And so people feel very bad about it. They feel very bad about a normal process. So, what can we do about this? Well, it's kind of like having those kind of conversations like we're having now, and hopefully lots of people will hear about them so that then they can start to normalize all of their feelings, to think that they're not bad people for feeling relieved that they can get a sex life again.
And start living again, because at the end of the day, our life is short. And the purpose of this life, I believe, is to find happiness and joy and live a happy life and a fulfilled life. And you should just get on with that, because you don't know when that last breath is.
Exactly. And sometimes for a lot of people, the erotic self and their sex life is the place of aliveness and the place of vitality.
But then again, you're then faced with that terrible thought, I hate this, but what will other people think?
Yes, always. Always thinking, loads of people have that very big anxiety, what other people think.
So what would you say to somebody who came to you saying, well, I can't do that. What would other people think about me?
Well, that might sound a bit radical, but I really believe that when you are in grief, in big grief, it's also an opportunity to change your life as you want it. And it's really a place where everything can get upset in a way that you can then reconfigure your life as you want it now. And I think that if you are finding yourself around people who are judgmental, who are not able to understand you, who are making you feel bad for your choices, maybe it's a good time to reevaluate your friendships and reevaluate who is around you and how you expose yourself to those people. And I get to often people think, I've just realized that the people that I see most of, as in on a daily basis, are not the ones that I like to be around. And so it's kind of like reshuffling those connections so that they can expose themselves to people, be around people that are actually understanding them. And even if they don't truly understand, that they don't, at least don't judge and accept.
And that's an important thing, isn't it? Because when the grief comes, you are completely raw. Grief has a huge energy to it. And I think it also really sharpens your vision on life. It sharpens what you want from life. For me, I can only speak from my experience, but I think it, in a way, if you can allow it, it makes you fearless too, because what worse can happen now? And so it can give you confidence, maybe to walk away from those people who are judging you or making you feel bad in some way. It takes confidence to do that.
It takes confidence, it takes resilience, it takes courage to keep true to yourself and to say, no, it is not all those people that are right and I am wrong. I am right with what I am feeling, and I will find the people that accept that. But it does take a lot of courage, because, when there's a huge amount of shame and guilt piled up onto all the other feelings, the guilt and shame can really push down all the other feelings, and people can really be depressed and think, I'm bad, I'm wrong, I'm broken. So it's really needing first having the courage and the resilience to push through the guilt and shame. And then you can see, on the other hand, that you're just okay. And you just have to find the people that think so too.
Yeah. And I guess do that with help and with tools. There is a lot of knowledge available, lots of resources and people with skills like yourself to go to. And these things are difficult to do on your own. I know, my journey, I've always read loads and loads of books and taken action on the books that I've read. I know people who have read loads of books and then they just put it on the bookshelf and it gathers dust and they haven't done anything. But I'm a real action taker. And I think it does require that action to move your life through the shame and the guilt and everything that goes with that. Because we're all so valuable. Each one of us is so valuable. But we need to find that value in ourselves, don't we?
Exactly. And if you think about it, what we are talking about right now is connection, right? We are grieving because of a connection lost, and we get shamed or we feel guilty through the connection with others. So it means that we also heal in connection with others. You know, if you find the right people, you can heal in connection too. And so you're right, it's very important. You know, we can't be all alone with this. You know, we have to find the support network, whether it's a good friend, a therapist, a writer that writes a book that's really helpful. You know, that is still a connection as well. Pets sometimes is a good connection. But really finding, gathering that support network around you is really, really important.
And I guess, you know, good old nature. Nature is a winner every time. And it's that reconnection, reconnecting to source. Because a lot of these problems and how we feel, maybe all of them, you know, they are kind of man-made. It's our perception and our interpretation that for us to look at, you know.
Yes, absolutely. And you're right. I think nature is really good to be able to connect with nature. That's when you can just strip everything away in some ways and just be with nature without having to have that thought about what society says and, you know, all those man-made thoughts, as you say, right? You can just be with nature. And then there's just no questions when you're there. You're just there and resourcing.
Because nature isn't judging you.
That's right. Yes. And actually, that's also why some people sometimes prefer pets, because they're also not judging.
But then I suppose we've also got to start learning skills to reconnect with humans. Is there a process to this where it might be a good idea to step back from human relationships whilst you work out the relationship with you and with yourself then?
I think it's first just looking at who you have around, because a lot of the time people say, you know, there's this really, really great friend that I really want to speak to, but I don't want to call them because I haven't spoken to them for 6 months, and it will feel weird to calling them when I'm in need. But actually realizing that person that I haven't taken the time to call is a person that's going to be the less judgmental, and maybe they feel warmer towards, compared to all these other people who have been around them a lot but not really feeling comfortable with. So it's first looking at your network, because it's likely that in your whole network of people that you have, if you really look closely, there will be maybe one person that you could connect with. So you don't have to start from scratch. And I think that's really important.
That's a great idea.
Yes, and to find that courage to really reach out to them. And most people, it doesn't matter if you call them after 6 months and calling them when you're in grief. You know, most people would be happy to listen and to help if that person is indeed a good person to speak with. So start there and then slowly just rebuild. And, you know, and there are also, in the meantime, organizations that you can speak to, you know, even if it's on the phone, you know, charity organizations that can help, for example, or therapist, or as you say, you know, sometimes reading a book and knowing that the person writing the book actually understands you. That is also a connection.
Yeah. So looking for empathy stories is, for me, I like stories where people have come through something and life is going to change. Grief always brings change. So it's like, I look for the people who have changed and their life has expanded and become better and more, because ultimately that is the goal, you know, to find joy and happiness in our life. But I know when you're in the depth, it's very hard. Those are like the diamonds that are on the floor that are just not glinting. They're there, but you can't see them. So finding that step, you know. So what's the first step?
The first step is to slow down. I think, really, to slow down and to be with yourself and learn the very basic skills of emotional regulations and self-compassion.
What was that? Emotional regulation, did you say?
Yeah, emotional regulation. So it's what we've talked about, for example, being able to sit in nature, as an example. You know, when you can just breathe.
So rebalancing, kind of.
Rebalancing. When you have very big emotions, you know, what you can do to just reduce those emotions to a level that are manageable compared to levels that are overwhelming. And again, it's just very much about sitting with yourself, learning those skills, you know, breathing, sending a positive thought about yourself to yourself, or connecting to a very good friend, you know, stroking a pet, or going into nature, doing a bit of exercise, you know, all those small little things that often goes out the window when we are in big grief. And you can only do that if you really learn to slow down. And slowing down also means to be that it's okay to stay in bed a whole day if you need to. It's okay to draw the blinds. It's okay to not be productive. And it's really trying to catch on to those few mantras as well, to say, you know, it's okay if I'm not okay today. And that is also part of slowing down. And that's really those are the first steps.
That's really interesting, because you feel like the world is going at such a speed, and that if you're not at speed, you're not with the world. But to be in the world, is sometimes it's just too much for you. But I remember the times when I was going through like the darkest time, and I would sort of look and watch, no, you should be out of bed by now. You should get up by now. I forced myself up. I just did not have what it took for me to engage in the day. Went back to bed, but I did go through a period of feeling guilty about being that. So to hear somebody say, it's okay not to be okay, and it's okay to stay in bed. It's weird how we need permission from other people to say that.
We do put so much pressure on ourselves as human beings that we don't really need to, right? In the world, you know, pre-COVID, of course, it was the rat race. Everybody was busy rushing around. But if you think about it now, when in COVID, when we all had the opportunity to slow down, so many of us are putting pressure on themselves because they look at the other people on social media, and the other people are doing, you know, 6 yoga classes a week, and you're doing only 2, and so you're not good enough, you know, all that stuff. So it's still happening now, even in our slowing down world. So that's just something that we do to ourselves. And, you know, one of the first steps is just to stop being so hard on ourselves.
And to come off Facebook. I actually did come off Facebook because I was finding it just overwhelming, stressful with everything that people were talking about. And I thought, you just get it off your phone. You know, it's on my computer, but get it off the phone. That's the rabbit hole thing, isn't it? That you can so easily get dragged down there, and it just doesn't help out at all. I think we're coming roughly to the end now. So let's recap what we've spoken about. So we've spoken about people who are come to grief where they've discovered other things that doesn't help them. And then we've covered grief of somebody who's lost a loved one and they feel relieved. Now, I know they are two completely different things, but ultimately they're linked with the emotions of grief. The goal is happiness and joy. Give me 3 things that people can do, think, say, whatever. I'll leave it all up to you. That is ultimately going to give them the hope of their life becoming more joyful and happy.
Well, I think the first one is gratitude. And that is a very difficult one to get at the beginning. So again, no pressure to get it. But it, as you say, it's like those diamonds that are already on the floor and you just don't see them. But often people say, you know, when there's been some trauma, whether it's a cancer treatment, for example, or, you know, very big bereavement, later people say, I'm glad it happened because it changed me in that way that I would have never changed before. And they're managing to find a much better life than they had before. And that's, you know, when you say that to somebody at the beginning of grief, they will completely reject it. It doesn't make any sense. But I really think that to get joy is to not to keep entertaining the idea that you might be grateful later if you don't feel grateful right now, but also to catch gratitude as and when you can. And sometimes it can be just the small gratitudes, like I am grateful that I can look at this tree right now and breathe and be connecting with this tree. And then you can have over time bigger and bigger gratitude, like I am grateful that I have better friends around me now. I'm grateful that I've changed my life in a way that works really well for me now. I am grateful for all those great memories I had with my loved ones.
What do you think of maybe writing those kind of things down, even if you don't yet have them in your life?
I think it will be good. You know, sometimes it can be, the small gratitudes can happen anytime. So sometimes it can even be, I'm grateful that I'm still alive right now, or I'm grateful that I can have breakfast today. And you can definitely write them down so that you can be reminded of them later in darker times.
So 2 more.
Laughing, because it's another thing about mourning. People think they're not allowed to laugh. And actually, laughing is a really good relief, and it does bring joy. So it could be, you know, watching a comedy, for example, something that you find really, really, really funny, and it's okay to laugh, or, you know, YouTube silly videos or whatever. Or, you know, even better, finding a good friend and laughing with it, because sometimes calling friends and connecting is not just always about talking about the grief, it's also talking about other things. Finding a bit of humor. And it is actually also okay to find a bit of dark humor. Why not, right? Whatever works.
And finally,
And the third one, I would say reconnecting with yourself and reconnecting with your body, because as we said earlier, sex is can be a place of joy and a place of vitality. And there is absolutely nothing wrong with gifting yourself with a good, proper quality time with yourself of touching your body. I'm not necessarily talking about masturbation here, but I'm talking about being really kind to your body, giving yourself pleasure in your own touch, because touch is another thing that often people lack after a bereavement. Sometimes touching yourself can be just as good, you know, even if it's like a big long hug that you do with yourself, you know, squeezing yourself in your own arms, or sexual pleasure, that also works fine.
Yeah, you know, I'm single and live alone, and in the times when I find myself alone, I would give myself a hug and tell myself how special I was to me, because sometimes we wait to hear that from other people, and then if we're not getting it from other people, it can fuel your upset and sadness. And I would also put my hand on my heart and be really gentle to my heart.
Yeah, that's very good. You know, learning to how we can touch ourselves is very powerful with love and kindness.
With love and kindness, isn't it? And respect for yourself, and not thinking that there's something wrong with you if you do that. So it's about bringing that kindness to yourself.
Touching your heart very gently with love and kindness is such a simple act, and yet we forget to do it.
And it brings enormous power to your mind, which I then, given everything else that we've spoken about, it's going to help to find that courage to get rid of people out of your phone book or whatever it is that you need to do to move your life into a much better place. I'm not one for saying you get over things. I disagree with that. But I do believe we can move our lives to a much better and brighter place, for sure.
Absolutely. You know, when everything is down and when you're just everything that you knew is kind of thrown away, what is left at the end of it all is you. And only you can decide what you're going to do with all those moving pieces to put them back in place that really fits with you. You know, making a world that fits with you rather than trying to fit with a world that's just not okay.
And that's really powerful. And I hope that more and more people find the courage and confidence to make the world fit them, not them fit the world. That's a wonderful place to end this conversation with. Thank you very much, Silva.
You're welcome. I really enjoyed it.
That was, that was great. I hope people get a lot from that, and to know that, you know, a little bit of kindness to yourself can go a really long way.
Absolutely. And never losing sight of joy. There is always some around.
There is, no matter how dark life can get. Marvelous. Thanks very much, Silva.
You're welcome.
Bye for now.
Bye.
Wasn't that great? So interesting. You know, you just don't know what is going on for people. Life is a very complex experience. And, you know, we need to talk about these complex subjects. So today I was really thrilled to be able to have this deeper conversation with Silva. If you would like to contact Silva in any way, then his website is probably the best place to go. And that is silvanevis.co.uk. That's silvanevis.co.uk. So if you feel the need to get in touch with him, that's the best place to go. And as always with my guests, I ask them for a little gift that will help you. You know, not everyone can afford to be able to go to see a psychotherapist or a specific specialist. So I ask my guests to offer some little gifts that will help you to at least start the beginning of your journey to creating more happiness and joy in your life. So to get that, then just go to the goodgriefconversation.com, and that's where you sign up for the podcast extras. As I said earlier, there is an option to give a small donation, either the price of a paperback or the price of a hardback book. It will be greatly appreciated. Until next time, when we have more guests with more great conversation on this subject that is still quite taboo, then do join us. They are always inspirational, always informational, and completely connected to being human. I'm Janet Jones. I'm your host of The Good Grief Conversation here on UK Health Radio. I look forward to speaking to you next time. Don't forget, if you've got an Alexa, you just say, Alexa, play UK Health Radio, and it will appear. Or you can get the app or simply go to the website to listen to more of UK Health's great programs. Until next week, have a wonderful week, and I will speak to you then. Take care and bye for now.